If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Welcome to the Great Awakening Show. I am Joanne, Divine Life Yogini, and on this week's show, we have Dr. Iske Britton. Dr. Britton is a marine social scientist, writer, artist, and ocean leader with a deep love and passion for surfing and the sea. Her work explores the relationship between people and nature, especially water environments. She contributes her expertise in blue space health and social well-being on national and international research projects. A lifelong surfer, her parents taught her to surf when she was 4 years old, and she channels her passion for surfing and the sea into social change. Dr. Britton's new book, Ebb and Flow, is a groundbreaking guide to restoring our relationship with our planet's waters. It's published by Watkins Books.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Dr. Iske Britton, thank you for being on the Great Awakening Show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
Lovely, lovely. And Iske, the first question, what does this great awakening, I believe that the world is going through an awakening at this time, you know, what does it mean? How do you see it? What does it mean for you and for us all?
Yeah, well, I'd like to hope we're going through a great awakening. We're definitely going through a huge time of unprecedented change. And yes, I think that's bringing up so much for people in so many different ways. But for me, I think I see it both for myself personally and in the communities around me as a kind of a deepening of that longing for connection, you know, especially with the more than human, the natural world, nature, and different ways of wanting to, I suppose, restore some of those lost relationships we have in our communities and families. So going back to especially that whole time during COVID for many of us was almost like that time to, because we had some of us at least had a time to pause and reflect, but also because of it, the unsettling, just having to be in a way with also really uncomfortable, challenging emotions and experiences, and the importance of also just being with that and allowing what wants to emerge to emerge. And I think for a lot of people, it was that wanting to realign with what matters most. So, you know, that time, quality time with families, and then seeing this huge kind of resurgence in people connecting with nature in different ways. And especially here, and I think it's one of the lasting kind of side effects, one of the good side effects, has been people going to the water. So many people wanting to get immersed in various water bodies and kind of keeping up this sort of swimming and dipping and things like that as a way to maintain that sense of connection.
Yeah, that's so true, because, you know, for the first time, many people would just go from their house to their work. They would never go to the forest. They would never go to the beautiful parks or down to the water, you know, only once a year on holiday. So you know, having that connection. I think this Great Awakening is bringing us back to nature, to Mother Earth, you know, to our ancient ancestors who were in connection to that. I think we've lost it. I think we, you know, this Great Awakening is awakening that part of us that needs that connection with nature once again.
Yeah, and when we realize the things that were blocking that connection as well, for so many it is a lot of our relationship with time, the power importance of stillness, of solitude, of silence, of when things actually quieten down, of not just being kind of caught up in that endless sense of doing and hyper productivity and being always on, but how hard it can be in the society, modern society that we live in, to actually honor and value those moments of, I suppose, as I call it in my book, ebb, the ebb state, honoring that as much as the flow. And ebb can also mean, I suppose, being with those things that are confronting and challenging as well, and learning to navigate that and adapt to changes that are also going to be beyond our control.
Yes, because everything is changing. We cannot control that. That's the nature of life, evolving, changing, stepping out of that comfort zone and, you know, challenging yourself to change. It's so important. But water, you have a fascinating connection and communion with water and the sea. So why is water so sacred and important to us humans? And how can we renew our relationship with water?
Yeah, our relationship with water is kind of fundamental, obviously, for our survival on such a watery planet. And it is the source of all life. It's also one of the, you know, along with rock and fire, one of the old earth.
Sorry, can you just say that again? You just glitched out really weird. I'll edit it, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying our relationship with water is kind of fundamental to who we are, to our survival as humans. And of course, it's the source of all life on the planet. And water itself as an element is one of the oldest, being 4 billion years old. And yet it's also the element that connects all life and moves through all of us across all time. And we ourselves are bodies of water. So I don't think it's an accident that we kind of mirror, you know, the planet and the planet's oceans. We're 70%, the surface of the earth is 70% ocean. And then our bodies are 60 to 70%. Salt water, and you know, so it's, and water then is this conduit of information. It stores memory, as well as it being essential, obviously, for our survival and our health. So that's that on one level. And then there's a reason also why we connect with it, not just on a biophysical level, but why it's always present across cultures, in terms of our connection to the more spiritual, to the otherworldly. It often involves water, wherever there's transformation, wherever there's a rite of passage, for example.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It's like water holds emotion, doesn't it, as well? And we come from the waters of life. We were born in water, in the womb. You know, it's so, you know, we come out. So water is such a connection. And they've done so much studying now, you know, that our emotions can affect the crystals of water, with Dr. Emoto's work on water and the crystals in water. And it's just so beautiful. Water is sacred, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And that's a belief held really firmly and strongly by most indigenous cultures and in a lot of our wisdom traditions, that water is sacred. Water is life. It's our medicine. And yeah, and you're right about that. It's just how we grow in water. We come from water when we're born. And so it's why I think it can be especially healing when we sort of, those times when we return to water, and as you use water, but water also influences our mood and well-being too.
That's so beautiful. And how can we connect us humans, you know, have a more intimate connection with the planet's seas, rivers and lakes? You know, That's part of the flow, isn't it? That's the way it's flowing. The moon. I mean, everything is connected. You know, the moon sees the tides in and out. Everything is connected in our this beautiful realm.
Yeah. So how do we then connect people the world over with water in all its forms? And that was really the main motivation for behind writing Ebb and Flow in many ways, was looking at, for me, I've grown up by the ocean and had that relationship with it my whole life, from when I learned to surf from the age of 4, standing on a surfboard. And that was kind of my medium and entry point into having this lifelong relationship with something as powerful and awe-inspiring as the ocean. But then that's not the case for so many people. And yet we come into water constantly in our everyday lives, but it's not something maybe we have consciously give thought to in terms of our relationship with it. And so I think it starts there with recognizing the aliveness of water as a energy that's moving, constantly cycling around the planet, but also moving through us, moving through all life. And I talk about that in the book too, as a way of thinking about connection, like the interconnection we have with all things, by just tuning into the water, even in our own bodies, and knowing that it connects us instantly to place. The water of wherever we are is in us. And so the health of that water mirrors our own health. And the water in our bodies renews and cycles through us 17 times a year.
Wow.
Which I find amazing.
I was just saying, did you say it changes? The water in our bodies changes 17 times a year?
Yes. Yes. So, you know, the water is essential for all the energy exchange needed.
So it renews. It renews.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So you think of the water cycle, it tends to be this abstract concept. You look at the, you know, a kind of neat and tidy graph of how water moves from, you know, the rain and the clouds to the land into the ocean, evaporates and back up again. And it maybe moves through trees, but it's also moving through us and all life. To the extent where, yeah, the water is constantly renewing itself in our own bodies.
Wow.
So however well the water is doing wherever we are it mirrors our own health quite literally. And then even when looking at the entanglement or interconnection of all life and the science behind that, so a drop, they're able to calculate in a recent study how soon it would take for a drop of water in my body to show up in like the polar opposite side of the world, the planet. So say from Ireland to New Zealand, and it would just take 6 months before a drop of water in my body would show up in a river or plant or another person in New Zealand.
Wow, that's incredible. Mm. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Mm.
So when we think of caring for our waters, it really matters. Like that's something that, you know, whatever is happening with my water here in my backyard actually has a global impact.
That's
and
right.
And so sometimes when we look to these challenges that we face, they may feel overwhelming. And yet if we begin right where we are, it can have actually a profound literal ripple effect.
Wow, that's so beautiful. And your book, Ebb and Flow, Connect with the Patterns and the Power of Water, you know, published by Watkins Books. That's what it is, isn't it? It's about us humans being more I call it alignment, you know, of like the divine, you know, mind, body, soul alignment, being in the now, being in the ebb and flow of life. Being in the ebb and flow of water. Please describe some about this beautiful book that you've written. Please tell us all about your wonderful book, Ebb and Flow, Connect with the Patterns and Power of Water.
Yes, I guess it really asks that, you know, and explores this question of what if the health of the planet's waters are a reflection of human health, and what if restoring a relationship with those waters was a way to restore and heal our own health. So it's looking at that kind of the reciprocity and to imagine a world where we understand and respect how the health of water is a reflection of human health, and that restoring that relationship is a way to restore our own health. So it's really, I guess, in part, it's an invitation to create a more intentional relationship with water within us, around us, and how that might help us through these times of fear and grief, complexity, the unknown. And then to that end, each chapter also offers practices and rituals with water that might begin to catalyze that shift, or even a cultural shift, towards a return to honoring the sacredness of water. But it's, you know, and it was interesting for me to write. I'm trained as a environmental scientist or a marine social scientist. So most of my training in writing and thinking is in more academic and scientific background. And so a lot of writing this book was having to unlearn.
Yes.
Some of those ways of writing and communicating to sort of free up my writing more creatively, and then really engaging with other forms of knowledge. So weaving together insights from my own lived experiences, but also that then with the wisdom of other water protectors, river guardians, as well as the, you know, current modern science evidencing our connection with water, and in particular that kind of blue health. So the psychological and restorative benefit of water for humans.
And it's so important at this time. You know, this awakening is an awakening on all levels, and we are waking up to what we are doing to the planet, you know, ecologically, sustainability. It's so important. And the oceans, you know, and the marine animals, it's so important to be, you know, to have, you know, responsibility to, you know, look after our environment, which, you know, the seas need to be looked after at this time. We've been taking, and it's time to give back, is it not?
Yes, and that's a lot of what the book is about too, is about how do you kind of foster that relationship of reciprocity. So even going into the, you know, to water for our own recreational benefit or enjoyment, in one way is still feeding that narrative of, you know, of what water can do for us. But at the same time, kind of flip it in the book of looking at as we're engaging with water, what are we also contributing and giving back to the waters? And then it's interesting to explore, for me, having such an affinity with the ocean, there's like different emotions that can be awakened from different water bodies. So for me with the ocean, it's always going to be this place of belonging, almost a sense of homecoming, which in a way is also connected to what you said earlier about how we come from the waters of our mother's womb, and amniotic fluid is fascinatingly the same density as seawater. So wow. When we go back to the ocean and we allow ourselves to relax and be held, and even just to float for a moment, I think it has to awaken biologically that memory in our bodies of the time probably when we felt the most safe in our lives. And then also then there's with writing Ebb and Flow is having to understand water in all its forms. So learning more about rivers and lakes and the work being done with them, but also, you know, even metaphorically speaking, rivers are this real source of vitality and movement, helping maybe understand our own life's journey and how there's always these downstream effects with everything that we do, and how the river can connect and cross and be boundary crossing. And in lakes, that's an interesting one for me. I always hold a place of fear somewhat around lakes because they're less familiar to me, and they hold, there's often a place, they really hold a powerful mythology often is associated with a lot of lakes. And I think that maybe feeds into my subconscious. So it can be a place of fear, and water can be that for many people, but also is a place then of stillness and reflection. And I talk about that paradoxical relationship, how I think a lot of the healing and transformative power with water, and we're seeing more things like ocean therapy, surf therapy, and so on, but it is to do with the fact that it is, and it can be a place of danger and fear and risk. So it can confront us and challenge us in ways that ultimately I think are really important for our own healing journey.
Yeah, that's so true. Mother Nature, you know, she can be treacherous, you know, she can kill, but then she can heal as well, you know, and the ocean is so healing, you know, it's beautiful. The salt water, everything is just, and walking barefoot on the ground of the beach is so beautiful. You're getting all the, you know, wonderful energy of Mother Earth. And, you know, tell us more about the healing, the healing benefits of water. And how can water inspired strategies restore calm? How can it reduce stress and, you know, soothe anxiety? Because as you said, the water therapies, tell us a little bit more about them. Yeah.
In so many ways it can. I think really there's a lot of kind of more, I suppose, recent emerging and new science broadly called blue health, that supports the indigenous understanding of ecological interconnection and that interdependency we have with water. But there's, you know, fascinating research coming out of Plymouth Marine Lab, for example, where they're sampling the sea air, the sea spray aerosols, and just finding that they have a complex and unique chemical composition that carries with them the signatures of all life in the ocean. So if you're walking, you know, even by the sea or on the beach, and you're breathing in that sea air, anyway, it can feel really invigorating. Well, they're finding then that actually the aerosols have a healing effect because it reduces inflammation in the body's cells. And when you're breathing, you're also breathing in essentially all life in the ocean,
minerals,
minerals and everything else. So the ocean is, if you rightly pointed out, is the most biodiverse of all environments. And we think of that in terms of the more maybe charismatic sea life of, you know, other marine mammals and seals and dolphins and whales. But even in, if you look at a liter of seawater, there are 10 billion microbes. So the water is literally alive. And that might freak some people out. But if we look at our own microbiomes too, most of it is more than human. It's non-human. I think up to 90%. So we ourselves aren't really these separate individuals at all. And I think water, then the healing effect is that it reminds us of that. And then the ocean therapy and various other kind of, I suppose, aquatic therapies are tapping into that and discovering that it's especially restorative when it comes to our psychological well-being. So in terms of reducing stress and anxiety, in particular depression, there's a brilliant book out recently by Dr. Mark Harper called Chill. So it's looking at the healing benefits of cold water immersion in particular and wild swimming.
That's really science. Popular, isn't it, at the moment? Why is that? Why is so beneficial, the cold water? So
well, there's a few different things at play. So on one level, what happens, we're seeing there's many different things. There's a lot done in terms of like the neuroscience behind it, looking at how simply even looking at water, because of its color and movement, kind of can hold our attention in a really effortless way. So it reduces that sense of brain fatigue or fog when we're kind of caught up in a lot of activities that require this really directed attention and focus during our day to day. So, you know, our driving and our commuting and our emailing and our our main way of kind of communicating, being on screens. So it acts as an antidote to that, activating a more meditative state. So they can see that how it alters our brain waves, even by just looking at it. And almost the equivalent to if we were sitting and actually doing a meditation. And so that's known as the kind of blue mind effect. So it acts literally as an antidote to that stress response in our bodies, that fight or flight mode. And of course, when that happens, then you see a reduction in stress hormones like cortisol and the activation of something like, say, like the vagus nerve in particular. There's new and exciting science around that, of how it gets activated or stimulated when we're in or near water. And again, when that's activated, it has that calming effect in the body and releases feel good hormones. So there's this whole chain reaction physiologically and psychologically that happens when we encounter water. Some of it stems from maybe our own evolutionary biology, and then it's affected by our own like life history as well. But it's all of the characteristics of water combined, I suppose, has an effect. So like the sounds, the smells, the sensations, it's so multi-sensory. And that's what helps us also feel that sense of presence, like of being fully embodied in the moment. So helping us kind of get out of the mental chatter in our heads and be in our bodies more fully.
Makes not sense. In the past.
And the call yeah. definitely does that.
Yeah. It brings you right into
shocks you into your moment. Body. Yeah. It literally awakens you.
Yeah, that's right. And what are some practices to forge a new relationship with water? What are some of the practices? Can you give us a few?
Yeah, there's many in the book, and I try to make them all as accessible as possible so that you could access them wherever you are. You don't have to be by the sea or be able to even to get to what you think of as wild water. So it could even be starting with the water in your own body. and actually that's a great, I always say to people like that, this, the best place to start is actually with the breath. So a lovely way to think about our connection with the ocean wherever you are is acknowledging how it's something like over 50% of the oxygen in the air we breathe comes from the ocean, released from phytoplankton, these tiny microscopic plants in the ocean that then allow us to breathe. So the ocean breathes for us. It's releasing oxygen. And then when we take a breath in, so if you think about it, say every second breath comes from the ocean. So it's a lovely way just to take a moment of pause to honor your own inner ebb and flow, to maybe take even three conscious breaths, noticing how our breath actually mirrors the rhythm, a cyclical rhythm of the tides. And there is this sense of ebb and flow in the body when we breathe. Of energizing us and cleansing. And then the added benefit, then we're actually connecting with the ocean as we breathe in a literal way, wherever we are on the planet. So I find that to be one of a great starting point and possible for anyone to do wherever you are. That would be one way.
Yeah. When I run a bath, I always put my crystals in the water, and I put Himalayan salt in there as well. And it's just so beautiful. I can really feel it. It really releases a lot of toxins, and it changes the alchemical structure of the water that we're in, because we know tap water is not very healthy for you, is it? we shouldn't be drinking the tap water at all. Or bathing in it, really. But, just doing these little things can just change that, can't it? And uplift and raise our vibration.
Yeah, water is really sensitive to its environment and is responding to its environment all the time. And of course, so are we. And that's an issue too. So I think another way to start as well, when you're looking at how to restoring a relationship with water, is getting to know your water. So even like the water coming out of your tap, for most of us, I'd wager we don't know where it comes from. Yeah. Certainly even for me, identifying as a kind of water person, when I started to write the book, I realized I didn't know the source of the water that was coming out of the tap that I was using every day. And so that kind of took me on a journey to get more familiar with my own watershed. And we all live in a watershed, a catchment area, and just even getting to know the waters there can be really revealing, and then help create this deeper connection with place as well, and hopefully establish that kind of a greater culture of reciprocity or culture of care even. And just how water, there's a part in the book of how if you pour water from a jug into like my hand and your hand, then you all of a sudden you've got like three different types of water. Yeah. So when we touch water, when we come into contact with it, it has an effect on us, but we're also changing it. It's responding to us. And at a molecular level that happens too, because of the unique molecular structure of water. And so it's like one of the most common things and elements on our planet. And yet it holds so much mystery. There's still so little we actually understand.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Because water holds energy, like we hold energy, and our energy that we vibrate affects, we are creators. We're born in the image of the creator. We are creator beings. And we create with our vibration, our thoughts and our emotions that go out in to create that. So we affect our environment. We can affect water. It's just what you said with our emotions, you know, and water also holds that, doesn't it? Water holds that energy that can, you know, and wherever it comes from, it can hold that sacred energy. That's why drinking water from a sacred, you know, stream in Austria that's come down from the beautiful mountains is going to be so much beneficial for you than drinking the tap water, you know, in London. So tell us a little bit about how we can be healthier in drinking our water. What do you advise us to do? Which way for you is the healthiest way that we can drink water for our body?
I think, you know, tap water can actually be a lot better than, say, a lot of the bottled water. So the issue with the bottled water there, and then actually now it's an old drinking water, but we're, you know, there's microplastics in particular in bottled water. But they've done studies, I think it's up to like 3/4 of all the water sampled around the world contains a certain amount of microplastics now. So that, and for me, that's another example of just how entangled our, you know, our modern lives and behaviors of consumption and extraction are held and in reflected in the water. And so it's all connected quite literally. And there's no such thing as a way to the point where we're actually now, yeah, ingesting about a credit card size amount of microplastics every month. So I think a really important place to start would be, yeah, getting to know the water and the health of your water, especially the water coming out of your tap, and then what you can do for it to help. And, you know, water has an amazing capacity to renew itself if cared for, and look at ways of getting more actively involved in that kind of restoration work, which happens for water. It's how we use our land practices have a huge impact. And restoring our, you know, our rivers and waterways, which is so badly needed. And then also applying pressure politically for how important it is to have access to clean, healthy water. And that should be a universal human right. And unfortunately, it isn't even in the UK and here in Ireland. And in much of the world. So yeah, there's lots of different ways. And then of course, there's different ways of looking at how you could, you know, filter and improve the quality of water.
From your tap.
Because I think that's probably the most accessible water for people. So looking at ways you can start there and how do you improve it?
Put it into a filter jugs, because there's quite a lot, you know, because the you can taste the metallic metal taste from the tap water, and when I taste that, I know just instinctively that it's not good for me. Do you know what I mean? Just by that flat taste of that water from that tap. And when you know, there's lots of really amazing water filters, you know, around, and you know, it's beautiful because you know it goes through all of them. Beautiful, the minerals inside of it and everything. And you can taste it tastes so much better. So yeah, drinking purified water of some way or another is so much more better for your body.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. And you know, there's so many things now. You can get systems that go on your whole house to change all of your water. I just actually did another interview with a man who, he's part of the grander water filtration system that comes from Austria. And it's fascinating because you should watch his video that's going to come out soon, because he's talking about the relationship and how water can hold, you know, memory and hold and give, how water can give, like sacred water from the beautiful Austrian mountain can give out that vibration, and it can change the water in its environment, you know, like water talks to each other. Like you said, it has a connection. It's sacred. It's a spiritual, you know, why are our ancestors, you know, so enamored with water? Because it does talk to each other. It has a connection. It has life. It's life force. It's the prana, isn't it? Inside the water, which is so sacred.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, in the book, it was really interesting then to research and discover some really interesting initiatives underway, like different ways of reconnecting with water and restoring water. One would be like the River Listening Project, spearheaded by Leah Barclay, which started in Australia. But again, as an example there, you mentioned about our rivers and waterways. Each of them literally have it, their own song, their own kind of like music it makes. So what Leah did is using, you know, quite basic hydrophone technology, did recordings of the sound of these rivers beneath the surface. So we always think of, obviously rivers have a certain sound signature when they're running and free flowing that also draw us in. But I'd never really thought about it before. Of course, there's like a whole other world beneath the surface in rivers as well. And when the river is healthy and free flowing and teeming with life as this really kind of vibrant kind of orchestra going on of music, of all the different sounds every species is making. And then in the rivers that are unhealthy or polluted or that have been dammed, and are no longer free flowing, actually are silent. So there's rivers that actually, in a way, are devoid of life and have no sound. And the River Listening Project is a way then of bringing, I suppose, communities along to connect with their river and sort of learn to listen to the river in a different way. And then an indicator, obviously, of the health and the benefit of the restoration work is starting to notice and listen to those sounds, to the music come back when as life returns to the water. So it's incredible to see even a river that's completely silent, that is essentially dead, can be brought back to life.
Wow, absolutely beautiful, absolutely beautiful. We can all learn so much, you know, about just doing a little bit of research, you know, into water and its sacredness, because as you said, it really is, you know, it's time for us to awaken. It's time for us to get a new relationship, isn't it, with water. And it's just so beautiful. And thank you for writing this beautiful book, because water, if, you know, when you're in water, you really relax, don't you? You can feel it. And I think people have to become more in touch with, you know, just letting go and surrendering, you know, in that beautiful place. You know, I mean, I meditate a lot, but also like when you're in that water and you're floating, that's a form of meditation, isn't it? That's a form of letting go. That's a form of being, as you said, being held by the ocean, being held and loved by the mother, by Great Mother Earth. It's just so beautiful. And I think this is the time where people have to get back to that sacredness of Mother Nature, the sacredness of the earth, the sacredness of the water, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And that the sacred is in the everyday, and that it doesn't have to always be somewhere where you go away to access or a sacred spring up a mountain. It's looking at ways to honor the sacredness in the everyday as well. And like you rightly say, it's also not just about how the water's effect in terms of boosting our positive emotions, but the importance of feeling and releasing challenging ones, that ability to like let go and release can be quite profound with water as well, and why it's so closely associated with healing when it comes to grief and trauma. And a lot of, you know, the research I've done with various groups of people and why they're drawn to the water, it comes up again and again, this place of when you go to immerse yourself in water or go swimming in it, it's that place of release where you're able to let go of feelings or feel all of what you're feeling without judgment. It's almost like even, you know, when you're in the ocean in particular, you can kind of cry freely and the salt yes. water tears are mixing with the salt water and there's no difference. But that also, yeah, I'm going back to that piece where it can be a place of real fear or danger, and that it isn't equally accessible for everyone. So then the book looks at some of the dynamics of that too, of the barriers people have to accessing water and the healing powers of it, and the amazing initiatives underway to create more of these transformative spaces in places where, in particular, I think for women and girls maybe wouldn't have access to the ocean, to water, to have these healing experiences.
I mean, It's so true. Look at baptism. Baptism is always done. My friend got baptized the other day in Brighton Ocean, you know. Why do we baptize in water? It's so, it, you know, you're cleansed. It's a cleansing process, isn't it? You know, water cleanses us. It takes away, you know, our darkness. It brings the light in. It cleanses and purifies us. So that's why we should all read your beautiful book, Ebb and Flow, and, you know, get back to the sacredness of, you know, and bringing more sacred water into our lives.
Yes, definitely. I certainly hope so.
And where can our audience buy your book? Where is it now? Is it actually out now?
Yeah, Ebb and Flow is out now, and it's available hopefully in all good bookshops and everywhere you buy your books, basically. And it's available as an audio book as well, which might be another nice way to access some of the more guided practices that I share as well on Audible.
Wonderful. That is such
and if you want to find out so you want to find out more about that book and my other work, another like place to start would be my own website, which is just eastkeybritain.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for writing this really important book, Iski, and for, you know, all the research you've done, and for bringing sacredness back to water, and for awakening people to the sacredness of water in their lives. It's really important.
Oh, thank you so much, Joe.